Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person or the parent of a young or impressionable child now in attendance, that you and the child leave the auditorium for the next 90 seconds.
Good evening, and welcome to another episode of the Video Nasty Project. Last week, we did the first Friday the 13th movie. Tonight, we're going to be taking a look at Jason 2, which is a weird name because Jason wasn't enough. That's not even the right franchise. What the fuck, dude? Go, get out of here. God, go away. God, they can't even do proper research. Roll the trailer.
15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23.
Jeff?
The day you count on for terror is not over. Friday the 13th, part 2, rated R.
So, Friday the 13th, part 2. That was the trailer, and this is the discussion where we discuss something that you've seen 100 times, and hopefully bring something new to the table.
So, rapid-fire synopsis. Movie opens. Girl you were mostly invested in last movie dies right away. Jump 5 years in the future. Meet a whole bunch of kids who are working at a new summer camp in a different section of Crystal Lake, thinking, ha-ha, we'll be fine. This isn't the cursed summer camp, and discover they're wrong. You know what? One of the things I found interesting in this film is it did something the first film did, which it did two things the first film did. First was a establishing kill several years beforehand, and then introduces us to characters who can lead us to believe that these are going to be our main characters, and it turns out, no, we're wrong.
The one thing I did like about this cold opening, now, generally as a rule, I don't think this cold opening worked as well in setting tone and establishing the mood as the first one did, but I did like how you get moments like, so here's Alice trying to work through her trauma, and she has this big sketch pad in her apartment. And that's a clever throwback to the original where she was an artist. So I liked her working through her trauma in a way that her character had already established. That was nice.
But, you know, then we meet our, you know, two characters this time. And, you are kind of led to believe, oh, Jeff and Sandra, they're going to be really important. Yeah, Flash, not really. I mean, no more than any other characters. But the one thing I did like in that opening, you know, when their truck is being towed away, is we get a practical joking character who, you know, Ned in the first movie was the most annoying character in the movie. You know, he's the, oh, we're going to be happy when you die. We meet a practical joker in this movie who does practical, but none of his jokes are really mean-spirited. You know, the truck is the closest thing.
And even the truck only gets towed around the corner and down the street never, a little bit.
And never goes so fast that they can't keep up with it. And as soon as they realize they've been had, it's like, ah, it's okay, fine. Fine, you got us. Come on, buddy. And then from there, it's, okay, we have a whole, we're going to have more kills this movie, so we have a whole bunch of people we got to introduce. While there are likable characters in this movie, they weren't as likable as the characters from the first film. You know, I felt much more connection with characters like Jack from the first movie and just any of the counselors from the first movie. They just generally seemed like nice people other than Ned.
And let's be completely fair. The characters in this, you might have a better attachment to them. They're still not very deep. There's not a lot to them. They're just painted in broad strokes, typical of the genre.
And from there, it's just, okay, we're at summer camp again. Oh, they've established this isn't camp, the Crystal Lake camp. This isn't Camp Blood. It's a new camp on a different part of the lake. Because the other camp, the locals just wouldn't be able to put up with that. And you even have the locals going, why are you opening a camp anywhere here? Why? You're tempting fate.
that's the problem with 2, in that they hadn't really gotten crazy and experimental. Jason's not going into space. Jason's not going to Manhattan. Jason's not going to the other side of the lake with the two houses and the small housing community. It's pretty much a remake of part 1.
One of the reasons it's a poor sequel is they start out with, again, kind of the mystery. Oh, who's killing people? And then there's a real jump to, oh, somebody's been revealed as the killer. It must be Jason. Okay. Sure, it's just a movie. I'm going to relax. That's the thing with this whole movie. It's, oh, that doesn't make sense. Just go with it. Just go with it.
Their leap in logic did lead to a couple of nice scenes. Like, there's that one scene where they're in the bar. The counselors have left the camp for the evening, and they're going to go into town to party it up before the kids arrive. And there's that one scene with Ginny, and she's at the bar, and she's, like, philosophizing on what is driving Jason. Well, imagine that he's this man-child that's been living in the woods. He has no sense of death other than, oh my God, I just saw my mom die. And that changes the world. I really like that character building scene.
It's a good character building scene, but the one thing that makes you stop immediately, it doesn't matter who you are, it makes you stop and go, wait a minute, Jason died in 1953.
Yeah, it's a whole bunch of, oh, let's gloss over that fact.
Really, you don't pay attention too closely to the joins of the seams in this movie because you're going to reveal some stuff you don't want to look at. This movie does not match up at all with part 1.
No, it doesn't. But one of the problems is with me, other people don't have this, but I do, is those stupid little seam problems stand out like with strobe lights for me in every film that's a sequel to something before it. Every time I see something, it's like, that's not what happened.
One of the other moments of character building that I really liked was Mark in the wheelchair, where you get, he's hanging around in the periphery role. He doesn't really can be involved an awful lot because, well, he's in a wheelchair and you can't run, you can't swim, you can't do camp things. And then they get this quiet moment with his potential girlfriend. And it's like, she asks, well, what happened? And you get this little bit of backstory on him. So I like the nuggets that they sprinkle in throughout the movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is one of the things that I think does, I agree with you when you say that it's a better film in that regard, because it does more character building.
Yeah. The again, this with, again, with the, okay, we need one jerk. The rest of the council, they're fine people. You know, it's, again, you kind of feel bad for these guys. I mean, they're not well developed, so you don't have that deep emotional reaction to their deaths. Because in the end, we're still dealing with a slasher film. But they're at least, fairly decent people. And, again, we don't know, who are Sandra and Jeff? They showed up together at the beginning of the movie. They're clearly already a couple.
And his truck was towed. And that was it.
Yeah. And Sandra wants to egg Jeff on to doing, let's go check out Camp Blood. And I love that moment, which would seem to be, oh, that's going to be our inciting event. They never even make it.
No, the cop runs into them and pulls them out of the loop before he gets to it. Yeah, we have not gotten to the point in the series where our allegiances have shifted from the counselors to Jason. We're still pretty much on the counselor's side this early on in the franchise.
Mm. I do at this point, though, want to bring up kind of one of the elephants in the room with this series, and it's something that both Ian and I had tracked down in our pre-research. This movie was the one that really ramped up, we're going to use nudity as a selling point. And so anytime there was going to be a sex scene, you were going to see frontal with the girl. And the problem is the actress playing Sandra had lied about her age.
She was only 16. And so that scene hit the cutting room floor. The second Paramount found out, whoa, no.
Yeah.
And they had the film edited. They had it completed when it came to light how old she was.
So a lot of the sex scene when they get the spear.
There's a scene where she and Jeff are undressing where you see him take off her shirt. You see her, she's just off camera. I'm sure she was on camera originally and they fudged something.
Yeah.
To
you do put her out. See her breasts briefly.
But it's like a really quick.
It's really fast.
It's almost subliminal. But yeah, and that was just sort of a, it didn't take away from the overall film. It was just one of those, oh. And the thing is, I looked at her, she didn't have a lot of credits after that.
No, her career did not go anywhere.
You know, it's not like Mila Kunis, and that's because, you know, all she did was lie about her age to get on a sitcom. But this is like, okay, you told them you were 18, you're going to get naked on screen. You have to know this is going to be, well,
somebody's going to notice you, I think.
Except, of course, I always go back to, but you're 16. Those kind of things don't always sit to your brain. Because it's like, I'm getting paid to be in a movie. You know the person I really wonder about? The actor who plays Jeff in that scene.
Oh, my.
What he must have thought when he found out she was, what?
I didn't know. Don't arrest me. I didn't know she was 16.
That's just one of those trivia points that really should be pointed out of when you see this movie, especially if you know that going in.
Like, no, girl, no!
Because let's see, let's just say they use her for a lot of fan service throughout the film. And it, although there was...
She's not as bad as Terry, though.
I was going to say, Terry, on the other hand, I have to believe Terry, it's against her religion to cover her belly button.
And those ass cheeks. Good Lord. Those were some short shorts.
Yeah.
I did like when she was out in the water on the lake and you're thinking, okay, Jason's going to come and get her. And you even hear the Jaws music just very slightly. It's just the opening. Bum, 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 bum. And then nothing happens. I really like that moment.
Well, something happens. Jerkass steals her clothes, but that's a...
And she does get killed in a few moments, but not in that one scene where you're thinking, okay, here it comes.
Yeah. And she was one of our bigger aspects of fan service in the movie because they, oh, at least we get to show her breasts. That kind of brings back the question because the first film got accused a lot of misogyny. And I was like, that really wasn't present in the first film. In the second film, I mean, you're dealing with a different set of creators. I don't know that I would necessarily go straight up misogyny, except that we very clearly had a very misogynistic character. He's one of the characters where there's so many characters to keep track of at this point. He's just Jerkass. He's the guy that gets caught in the snare.
Mm-hmm.
And he is clearly a, well, if you weren't murdered by Jason, if camp had gone off, there'd have been a whole another set of trouble with you.
You would have been dead. I wouldn't say that the movie is necessarily misogynistic, but I would say that it is more objectifying of women this time around. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We get a lot of that here, but not necessarily misogyny.
I guess the always that question, where's that line on objectification versus misogyny? I know some people that would argue that there is no difference. I think in here, I mean, clearly, again, there's only one reason that Terry goes skinny dipping, and that is an excuse to have a naked woman on screen.
Yeah.
But as has been pointed out, this is the movie that started ramping up that aspect to the point of it is, if you don't have that in a film, it's not a Friday the 13th film. You know, if we don't see topless action, it's not Friday the 13th. Although, check me on this. I don't think Freddy versus Jason. I think Freddy versus Jason was PG-13 on that regard.
No, it was R because he did have a lot of violence going on, but I don't think there was any nudity in.
Yeah. Because nudity wasn't necessarily a staple of that series. Right. Not that it didn't have it. There were some moments of nudity in the series, but not to the level that Friday the 13th ended up having.
Isn't it pretty much the case that after, because Friday the 13th Part 3, nudity?
I'm trying to remember.
You know, see, this is the problem with the series. It starts blending. The problem is throughout the series.
Yeah,
you have...
I think it's just that I'm thinking they ramped it up for 2, and then while it happened throughout the rest, it just wasn't as prolific.
I mean, there's the infamous Jason X scene with the android. With the nipples falling off. And, of course, then the holograms. So, you know, it is throughout the series. At that point, though, it did start becoming the joke. There's a movie. Okay, here's a digression. Ready?
All right.
There is a great film called Final Girls. Mm-hmm. That is a deconstruction of it is Friday the 13th meets Last Action Hero, and it really explores the tropes, and it's where these characters enter a slasher film, and they very much know we're literally in a slasher film, and they know the killer will show up as soon as someone goes topless, and they have a character who's the sex pot girl who they put mittens on her. They put oven mitts on her hands and duct tape them on her and put a life jacket. They prevent her. And because she can't get naked, she devolves to a childlike state because she wasn't that deeply written. And she has the greatest line, in my opinion, in that movie. Why does he hate my boobs? So, you know, that has hit the point where it is a known genre trope. And that movie, everything was so XP Friday the 13th. By the way, final great movie. You should see it.
Yes. If you've not seen this and you've gotten this deep into the review, then what the fuck are you doing not watching The Final Girls?
But a great film with a great cast and should be seen. And it's PG-13. So you can watch it with your family. They do very great discretion shots to hide any boobage. All right. Now that we've talked about tits.
So, back to Friday the 13th, then.
Sure.
So, the reason I think I like 2 a little bit better than 1 is because I think Steve Miner is a little bit of a better director than Sean Cunningham was. There were scenes like, there's that one scene where Jenny and the boyfriend go to the camp counselor office. Everything is coming down. They're finding dead bodies. They're freaking out. They found oh my God, this bed is covered in blood. So they go to the counselor's office to get help. And normally what you would do in a scene like this is you would get a close-up of somebody on the phone slamming the receiver. Hello, hello, hello. Why isn't anybody picking up? What you do is you see the window and the camera just pans over to the wires that have been snipped and you hear the conversation in the background talking in the distance very quietly about, I'm not getting anything on there. So stuff like that was really clever.
This script does more, it's not really adequate, but it does a better character building. You give the characters have some substance to them. Where how to put this? All right, so the first film, you got a couple of guys who enjoy fishing. They don't bait their hooks because they're not really interested in catching any fish.
They just want to spend some time out in the woods.
Correct. This film is more about a couple of guys who actually want to go fishing. They're putting bait on their hooks.
I think the bones of a good script is in here. And I suspect if there had been less studio interference, you know, that may have been able to be heightened. But as it is, you know, we got what we got. It does have good elements. There were several great things it codified. And I think one of the sad things that I knew was planned and even filmed, and I think they ended up cutting it out because when they looked at the final result, it's like, oh, that looked stupid. Shit. Well, I guess we can't use it. This should have been the film that introduced supernatural elements into the franchise, because that final tracking shot of Pamela's head, the intention was the eyes were going to open.
Oh, yeah. But Steve Miner thought it looked a little too goofy.
It didn't look good on film. And he's like, okay. Because you can very clearly tell that's not a prop. That's a woman's head made up.
Yeah.
Which would later come into play. I mean, including that head. It's just at that moment. Although I will say the fact that it wasn't a prop, that it was an actual actress in makeup, really helped add to the creepy factor of the head itself.
So, slasher movie. Pick a death. Ian, pick your favorite death, please.
You know what? The asshole getting caught in the snare.
Well, shit. That was going to be mine, too.
I have to tell you, that one is more to the... It's just along the lines because it's a lot... Celebrating somebody dying in a film? Ah, is that what I'm doing? The guy was an asshole.
See, the reason I like it, though, was that was a moment of Jason as a cunning killer.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that he had snared the asshole. It's Jason set us rope snare trap. You know, with the thought of, oh, hey, somebody triggered my trap. Oh, hey, look, this guy. All right. Well, this is going to be an easy one. Zip. But the idea that, you know, Jason isn't just at this stage he's not killing just off of opportunity.
Yeah.
This is premeditated. He is out to do maximum body count, and he's going to take this guy out, make him helpless by he's hanging upside down and then come up behind and slit his throat.
So you've got 2 minutes to round out your...
To come up with a better... Because that was my favorite kill, and I just laid out why. Outside of that, I think I really do like the... I do like the machete kill with the wheelchair.
Yeah.
Just from... Again, I like it for the technical aspects. We're taking a character that's been established to being a really great guy. And so it's kind of a... Oh, shoot. Mark? No. And then it goes from sublime to ridiculous. Because how did he get down those long stairs? Those were nowhere near there. But it's like, Jason, I'm going to take this body just because I want to go, wee, and watch him go down the stairs.
I would have gone with that one because of the stair staging. So fuck you, Jeff. So I am going to have to go with Crazy Ralph just because I like Crazy Ralph. Crazy Ralph is probably of the first two movies my favorite character. So getting him killed, it's like, oh, God damn it, Crazy Ralph. Who's going to tell me you're doomed now?
Fair enough. And we didn't even mention, yeah, Crazy Ralph's back, too, for a few minutes. You're doomed!
He doesn't even get a name check. He's just like, he shows up, pedals off, and then, like, shows up again, and then he winds up dead in the pantry.
Although he's still pulling those same shook. Why are you stalking the camp, Ralph? You know what's going to happen. You want to be doomed, Ralph. It's a death wish.
It's a death curse. You're all doomed. So you wanted to talk about Adrienne King and her career a little bit?
Other than the most non-movie related, but is related to the movie, she's a winemaker with a winery called Crystal Lake Wines that sells wine that are Friday the 13th themed. You can order them through her website. But beyond that, she has actually really stepped back and really embraced being in front of the camera. Since 2010, she's about every year done at least one film, if not upwards of three or more, a year since.
She did a lot of voice acting in the time where she was off screen.
Yeah. A lot of it was voice over, as in...
Narrators and stuff.
Narrating things, not so much in the sense of it's an animated feature and a character gets voiced. It's just instances where they needed vocal work where you don't see a person speaking.
Like on a documentary.
Yeah.
Although, yeah, sorry. I'm going to stop now.
We can go on all night.
I'm going to stop now.
So, Friday the 13th Part 2. Would you seize it, Ian?
I say this almost every time, looking at the time period and when it came out, the sensibilities socially and within society. Yes, I would have pulled it.
Jeff, you concur? So,
no, well, actually, unlike one, this movie actually didn't have the level of gore.
In that I was prepared to let the first one slide, save for the snake snuff, I can't, in good conscience, say, no, part two's gotta go. Good. So... I'm going to let part two slide.
I've seen Bay of Blood. So to me, one of the big kills in this movie is the spear through the lovers. But that's a cutaway. You see the spear come down and then you see the spear under the bed. You don't ever actually see the spear impaling them. So there's more implied gore in this one than actual gore versus the original.
All right. It gets off scot-free.
Free-ish.
Free-ish. So, Ian, did you like part two?
Part two is okay. I don't like it as much as I do the first one.
Same question to you. Did you like Halloween 2? Did you like Halloween 2?
I did kind of like Halloween 2. If this was a video about Halloween 2, we'd be having a whole different discussion, though. However, I suspect you're asking me, did I like Friday the 13th Part 2? I'm with Ian. It's not as good as the first film. And part of it is, this was very much studio mandate. And it shows. However, what I did like is I liked a lot of the actors. Mm. I liked a lot of the performers. And so I really like Jeannie, our final girl in this film. You know, Amy Steele did a great job. And again, she is atypical of what we would later come to think of as a final girl. Although she did have one of the great final girl traits, which is smart. But overall, you can tell this one was kind of thrown together. There are some nice iconic moments that will feed the rest of the series. But for the most part, this one is just sort of a... It's a nice connective tissue that allows what worked in the first film to evolve into the rest of the series.
It's almost a soft reboot, really. If in modern parlance.
Everyone kind of agrees that for this sequel to work, you have to ignore a lot of continuity snarl.
Well, one of the things I will point out in showing that I agree with what your line of view is on it, is that after I've seen a film two or three times and I get past the hang-up of the problems, I begin to enjoy the film. So I do enjoy Friday the 13th Part 2. It's just not better than the first one.
Yeah.
I am going to have to buck the trend. I liked 2 better than 1. They're both... if very solidly in the middle of the pack if you're looking at the overall franchise. But I think that Part 2 has a little bit more to offer, like Jenny being smart. The idea of her psychological training coming into play at the very end is well executed, and I like how they sprinkled it in throughout the whole movie.
One of the things that really makes Part 2 less satisfying for me is the fact that this was a film that had studio mandating things. Do this. Don't. You can't do that. You have to do this. And the same thing happened with Halloween 2.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the reason why the film creators in both Friday the 13th and Halloween walked away from it. Because the studio thought they knew better. And
yeah, I mean, the fact that Cunningham completely walked away from this one. And I think that's part of the reason I don't like this one as much. It kind of shows.
Good night, everybody.
Our hamburgers are the finest quality beef expertly prepared for extra deliciousness. Treat yourself royally right now. Mmm, what a hamburger.
And that wraps it up for Friday the 13th. Jason is dead. We will never see him ever, ever again. Guaranteed, you can take that to the bank. Next week, we're going to be watching Cliff Twemolo in Grievous Bodily Harm, and it's going to be fucking amazing. So, drop us an email, thevideonastyproject@gmail.com, and we'll catch you all next week. Stay evil!
Get smoke better dub than I do.